This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
Welcome to Baseball Outside the Box, educational podcast for coaches, players, and parents from all over the world, where we bring you the most innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds who love the challenge, the status quo. Hello, everyone. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo. We are at the Lineup Media Group Studios, and we're thrilled to have you from all over the world listening to the show today. But as always, before we start, don't forget, do us a favor, join us on the podcast, become a member, because then you get all kinds of notices when the new shows come on. Go to baseballoutsidethebox.com. All you got to do is, you know, click on the iTunes or the Stitcher logo, and you're ready to go. It's going to help us. Also, if you give us some kind of rating, you know, if you really like the show, give us a 5-star rating. That would really help people know about the show, and it gets it out there faster. If you don't like the show, send us an email. Tell us. Let us know. Let us know how we can make the show even better. Okay. And don't forget, the Lineup Media Group is our main company that handles and has a lot of shows. Don't forget to listen to Jim Cromer, does a great job on Youth Baseball Talk. Also, Chasing Pucks with Panger. That's all about the NHL. The Bleacher Bums. And there's a whole lot more shows that you can listen to on podcasts. You'll enjoy it. Go to lineupmediagroup.com. Don't forget, we love getting your questions. Baseball questions, any type you want to send. Email those to me at info@baseballoutsidethebox. Again, info@baseballoutsidethebox. I will respond very quickly. We're on Twitter at Baseball Out. There's a ton of tips on Twitter. We'll talk also about our guests and on Twitter. We'll talk about all our guests there. Join us on Twitter. We'd love to, you know, interact with you. And don't forget, we're starting to put short videos on our website, baseballoutsidethebox.com. Those are little video drills that you can go to and just learn about the game in general. Now, we're excited about today's topic. It's a combination of a couple topics, but it's not your normal topic, just talking about the fundamental skill, which we tend to do a lot in a lot of shows. We're going to talk also about the mental part of all these. We're going to talk about catching leadership through performance with former Major League catcher Matt Noakes. I've known Matt a long time. I'll tell you a little bit about Matt. And then on the second half of the show, we should be able to get to it, depending on how well, you know, the catching goes, because Matt's got a lot of great information, how to become a great catcher and how to teach catchers. You know, again, not just the fundamental skills, but a lot more. But we're going to get into high-performance hitting, and Matt has the Hitting Solutions Company. We'll tell you more about that. I'll have him describe to you about his company. That's a super, super instructor. Now, if you don't know who Matt Noakes is, let me tell you about him, because I think you do. Not only is he a great friend, I've known him for a long time. I've learned so much from him. He's a former major leaguer. He's been in the big leagues over 11 years. He made it to the big leagues at the age of 21 years old. Now, we'll get into that also a little bit. He was an American League All-Star on the roster, won the Silver Slugger Award, selected to Topps Rookie All-Star Team, and finished third in the voting for the American League Rookie of the Year Award. Now, while he was at the Yankees, he also caught Jim Abbott's no-hitter on September 14th, 1993. Now, Matt took all his experiences in the big leagues. He went on to coach in independent ball. Also, first he played independent baseball with the St. Paul Saints, and then I was fortunate enough to connect with Matt, sign him with the Schaumburg Flyers. At the time, I was one of the coaches and the director of baseball operations. It was one of the greatest signings I had made, because not only as a player, but also as a coach, he helped a lot. But then he helped me understand the game a lot better. So it's going to be a great pleasure to have Matt on the show. If you're wondering how he dealt with the pressure in the big leagues, because as you know, there's a lot of pressure in Major League Baseball. Well, here's the only thing I need to tell you. Once you hear, you're going to know why. But Matt once, and he has his own private plane. He flew his own plane, and as he's flying to San Diego, I believe he had some oil pressure problems, and he had to land on the highway. And he simply said he hovered over some cars, waited for a spot to open, and he landed on the highway. Now, if you thought baseball was pressure, I'm not sure what else this flight was, but that was pretty scary, I would assume, for any normal person. And you've got to be mentally strong to deal with that. So I'm sure if you could deal with that, baseball was probably a lot easier for him. So now let's get started. You know we like to start with the show right away. Let's go ahead and introduce Matt. Matt, how are you today?
I'm doing great, Pete. Thanks. I'm just sitting here on my deck in San Diego, and it's hot today. It's 77 degrees. It's usually about 72.
Yeah, you're just trying to make us jealous here in Chicago.
Blue. Boring blue today.
Yeah, you guys, I'm sure you guys get a lot of baseball in San Diego.
It's coming out of our ears, and everybody's outside. You know, there's no indoor.
Well, let's do this, Matt. Before we start, tell the audience. You know, I gave them a little background, obviously, on your professional career and coaching and all that. But tell the audience a little bit about what you're doing now in general with your company.
Okay. Well, I work with high school age and college, basically showcasing age and college hitters that have a dream to play in the big leagues or to have a great, you know, college career. But usually that comes with a dream to play in the big leagues. And if you make it, you make it. If you don't, you don't. But it's with those ambitious players who, you know, have that dream, have that calling, that want to, you know, really focus and dedicate their, you know, their lives. You know, they're usually already doing that. They just need to know how to do it. They just need to know the path, and that's what I do. I help them along the way. You know, there's such a small window of time that you have to showcase and to show people that you can do it, and to show, you know, to project that you can play this game. And you really don't want to be in a situation where you make all the mistakes by yourself, because I was fortunate enough to have a good mentors. And, you know, when I got through playing, I really dedicated myself to that end, that I was going to train. I have a train right by my mouth, that I was going to make sure that all the questions that I had when I was playing, that they got answered, so that I could help the mainstream hitting community. You know, if you can hit, you play. If there's some politics and you're not in the lineup, if you hit, you'll play. So that's what I'm focusing on. Of course, I was a catcher, and I do focus on that as well, but primarily with the hitting.
Well, here's the best thing. We're going to start off with the catching part. Let's start off with this. I'm assuming whether it's catching or hitting, you know, I know there's a lot of people that teach the fundamentals, and I'm assuming, you know, you can get fundamentally out, you know, just too much over a time, you know, over a long time. But the mental aspect of how to deal with being a catcher, that's got to be tough. Give us an idea how you kind of mold your catchers mentally. How do you get them prepared to play the game?
Well, first off, I let them know that the job requires that they be a leader. Now, that doesn't mean you have to be the gung-ho vocal leader like you might think. You just have to be yourself. And you have to command the respect of the players around you. And I think that's something that they need to know at a young age. But that they can do it their own way, that they can be themselves. Now, you know, part of that comes with, part of that leadership is by how you go about your business. I mean, if you go about your business and you're dedicated and you work, you know, harder than anybody else, and you get to know the pitchers and, do the little things that a lot of people don't do as a catcher, you'll be a lot, you know, the respect for you will go way up. And that's really important. So there's just a lot of things that we'll dig into those in just a minute.
Let's go into what you said about knowing the pitchers. I think that's an interesting concept, because remember, we could be talking about 12-year-olds that, you know, sure, don't know their pitchers yet. Or we can talk about professionals. Either way, give us a little idea of how do you get to know your pitchers? What's the important thing to know about your pitchers?
Well, the most important thing is to know their name. You think that's funny, because I've had players, some teammates, I won't mention their names, but literally there'll be a pitcher on the team, and they'll be on the team, played together for like 3 years. And they'll say, "Who's that pitcher?" And I go, "Are you kidding me? they're like an outfielder or something. They just don't even know their name. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
But, you know, guys come up and down, and maybe if they weren't starting player all the time or something. But get to know their name. Number one, I know it's kind of a joke, but number two, get to know them personally and allow them to trust you and to trust your word. What you say is what you do. Spend some time. You have to spend a little bit of time with them. I mean, it's half the team. It's half the team that you've got to get to know. Now, when you're playing Little League in youth ball, it's really pretty much the whole team, because everybody, you know, if you play shortstop, you probably pitch. But as you go up, so it's a little bit easier. But the process is the same. Get to know everybody in the context of being a pitcher. You talk about it. You know, talk about their pitching. Ask them what they think their strengths and weaknesses are. Now, as a catcher, if you catch someone for any length of time, you kind of formulate an opinion on what you trust, you know, what you believe they can throw over. But get to know what they think, because it's really important, because you're not only trying to, you know, get them to throw what they're able to throw, but you also want to encourage them to break through some blocks or break through some, you know, they want to reach a peak mindset or change their way of thinking so that they can throw that curveball for a strike and not, you know, hang it. Or maybe they have a fear of throwing a pitch here or there. Well, there's a way that you can get them to encourage them, you know, just by having them take a risk here or there and throw maybe a screwball or a changeup, something that they're working on. But then you go back to what their strength is. You do it in situations where they're not going to get really hurt. So you have to protect your pitchers by making them, you know, throw to their strengths. But then you also want to encourage what they think they want to do, because you want them to grow as a pitcher. So really get to know them, I guess, is the key, and get to know what they're thinking about their game.
Now, a question that's going to come up, comes up all the time, and I know it's going to depend on the level, but we're going to get your opinion on the different levels that you've coached, how you think to develop a catcher from a mental standpoint, from knowing the game, knowing their pitchers. You know, calling pitches is always the toughest thing. Where do you begin with that? With the catcher, with the coach, a combination of both? What would you recommend to coaches out there at different levels?
Well, I think the first thing is to recognize that there's never a certain way to call a game. There's never a certain pitch to call in a certain situation that is exactly perfect. You have to realize that you have to go with your gut and also through your training and what has worked in the past and what is working now. You have to, you know, go with the flow. And there's a lot of different sequences that you can throw, but there are rules. And I feel like, you know, especially young players, if they knew the rules, I mean, instincts generally, you know, you say, oh, he's got great instincts, you know, as a runner or as a, you know, as a fielder. Well, it's generally because they've known the rules. They know how to think about what they're doing in a way that's more mature. And they've been doing it for long enough to where they don't have to think about it anymore. So, of course, they have great instincts. Well, same with, you know, as a catcher. If they know what the rules are, let me give you an example. Like, let's say late in the game, you know, guy's got a great fastball in, you know. Well, if you have a guy that's a pretty decent hitter, maybe your number three hitter, and it's late in the game and score is, you know, a one-run ball game or a close game, and this guy can hurt you, you don't want to get beat on an inside pitch in the ninth inning. I mean, you just, you know, you want to stay away from him. I mean, it's just a general rule. Now, that doesn't mean that your closer is not going to do it, like, but the high levels, at major league level. Yes, there are rare times when I had guys that would, you know, throw a curveball, you know, 3-1 and 3-2 with two outs in the bottom of the ninth, you know, 3-2 count. I mean, it was amazing. Some of these guys, their ability and their confidence. And I, you know, they'd shake, and I put down the curveball and I go, okay, here we go. You know, I guess he's confident, but you know, that's an exception. But there
well,
are certain,
hang on, yeah. What, man, let me ask you this, since you hit on that. Okay, let's talk about that with a little bit about the pitcher and catcher. If there's a difference of opinion, now I know in pro ball, you know, there's game plans, you sit down early. We did it in independent ball also. But if there's a difference, I mean, whose final decision is it?
It's always the pitcher's final decision, except he's got the veto power. Unless he's young and the catcher's saying, hey, listen, just you got to trust me. You know, throw what I'm calling. Just let's just get in this rhythm. And you know, there's no perfect, you know, count, perfect pitch, whatever. Just follow me and we'll do it. That happens at times.
But, and that's what you mean by knowing your pitcher, yes, too, right?
Exactly. And you have to know what he's thinking and what he's trying to do. I mean, he's trying to get into the zone. He's trying to get into this peak state where he can throw anything he wants. He can invent a pitch if he wants. I mean, he can throw a curveball at 3/4 of the normal speed if he wants. When they're locked in, you can almost kind of do anything. But and you know, even young players can do that if they've been, you know, that's their pitch. Yeah, so it's getting to know them, but you generally just want to, you want to feel them out. So as far as who has the right, well, it depends on your relationship, you know, of how close it is. Jimmy Key, for example, I used to catch him with the Yankees, and my joke with him was, you know, if we lose, I'd say this all the time, if we lose today, it's all your fault, because he would shake, he would add and subtract. And
sure.
And every pitch had a location. And so 1 in 5 are fastballs in different locations. And the way he did it, and which is a great, great way to do it, is he had a curveball, slider, and a changeup. Everything is down the middle until you get to 2 strikes, except for the fastball is in and out. But with 0 in 1 strike, the curveball, slider, and the changeup are down the middle. Now, he tried to get them low, but they were right down the middle. He wanted me to sit right down the middle. But with 2 strikes, no matter what the pitch, it's away. Okay, so that was his style. So I always knew the location. He would just add and subtract. But, you know, a lot of times as a catcher, you have to realize he might not want to throw certain pitches, but you have to get certain things out of him. You know that he's at his best when he throws that curveball, even if he throws it in the dirt for you. I mean, you don't have to throw curveballs for strikes. You know, if you could just throw them down the middle and throw them short, if you throw them, you know, throw them low, as long as you use them in the right counts, which I will expand on, you can still use it. You can still get the hitters to think that you have that pitch, because you don't want the hitter to think there's only one pitch you're going to.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, you got to. So in that case, when as a catcher, ultimately, you want to be a leader where, you know, you've thought about this, but you can't really think about it, especially as a young catcher. You can't think about it unless you know the rules. And I'll go through them as we dig in.
Okay. And now as coaches, you know, you got young coaches that may, you know, maybe early stages, 11, 12, 13, 14. You know, I mean, we know, you know, development is important. Winning shouldn't be as important. It should be a result of what you're working on. And then you get older, you know, coaches have in college, you know, it's your job on the line, pro ball, your job's on the line. So where's the fine line between who's calling the pitches according to the, you know, the hitters? Because you don't want to make those mistakes. Is the catcher going to start calling the whole game, or is it coming from the pitching coach, or is it coming from the, you know, the manager and so forth?
Yeah, I mean, it's gone both ways. I mean, there were times, I remember this one time, we were playing Minnesota in the late Kirby Puckett was hitting, and he was just, you know, he hit the ball hard 3 out of 4 times. I mean, he just crushed it. And he was typically a hitter that hit a ball over his head or in the dirt. And it didn't matter. I mean, it is whatever you threw up there. So I remember this one game, you know, I think Kirby had hit 2 line ball, you know, line shots. I mean, crushed them. I hit them so hard, they just sounded different. And so I come into the dugout, and Sparky goes, I got this. Let me take Sparky. I'm sorry. Sparky said, let me take Kirby. I said, all right, it's up to you. You go with it. And then he calls a pitch here, and I can't even remember what it was, but it was out of the zone. It was up in a way, I remember. And he crushed it opposite field, off the wall, off the baggy in Minnesota. And I just kind of thought to my – I looked over at him, and he waved me off like, I don't want it anymore. It's all yours. So, you know, ultimately, your goal is to be the guy that the manager trusts and you call the pitches. Now, that's not going to always happen, and that's okay. You don't want to get bent out of shape because, you know, for a while, you also got to get to know your manager. I mean, you have to know what's acceptable to him. And, you know, you don't want any second guessing. And I mean, he may have a plan, an idea. He needs to be heard. So if you let him know that he's being heard and you're doing the things that he wants, like, hey, I don't want, you know, I don't want you to follow a curveball with the changeup. You know, don't do that. I mean, that's not a good idea anyways, but maybe that's just a pet peeve, or I don't want to see two curveballs in a row. In my case, like, one of the rules is you don't want to go ball to strike with the same pitch unless it's a fastball. You want to, I'd rather go a strike curveball to one out of the zone or one short. Instead of throwing it for a ball, giving them the timing and the speed of it, and then throwing a hanger. You don't want to do that. So that's, for example, a rule.
Now, if I gave you a 12-year-old team right now, or a 13-year-old, 14-year-old team, how would you do with the catchers? Would you start to call the pitches at the beginning, or would you give them that leeway right away to do it?
I would call the pitches and let them know that I am doing it so that he learns. And as soon as he learns the idea of it, and I'd walk him through it. And like I said, I'd start giving him some rules. For example, you don't want to get beat on your second and third best pitch. Your second best pitch, you're going to get beat, you know, occasionally, but not on your third best pitch. Mm-hmm. And if you're in Little League and you got three pitches, that's a lot. But guys do. Yeah. And they get beat. And it's like, why did you get beat on that pitch when you have no business throwing it? You don't, you know, you make your money off the fastball. So does a hitter. But it's the best pitch in baseball. It's the most easily controlled. And so, you know, you need to figure out how to throw that fastball and throw that pitch and get it over in a location that is a difficult pitch to hit. So, you know, there's another rule. You know, whenever you go off speed two times in a row, especially when you go slower, like if you go a slider to curveball, slider isn't necessarily an off speed. I mean, it is, but if you go slider to a nice, good, slow curve, you can pretty much throw. I mean, we've done research where you can go, as long as you go off speed twice, you can go out of the zone twice. And if you hit the low, you know, if you hit outer half the fastball at the knees, the guy, I mean, which is very hittable, the guy's going to get himself out 98% of the time. I mean, because you've taken him physically off stride. And he may have a comfortable 0-for-4 if you keep doing that to him. It's just a little trick. So if you start off the count with a fastball for a ball, there were times, or a fastball for a strike in this case. For example, I've had some pitchers that weren't very good when I was playing independent ball. Not that all of them aren't. I'm just saying there were, you know, there's always some that are a little bit short, and that's fine. So you have to get the most out of them. So sometimes what I do, if we get lucky and get that first fastball over, what I'd do is I'd have him throw another couple breaking balls right in a row, and I would protect him. On the first one, I let him throw for a strike. On the second one, is, you know, it's usually a hanger, so I would set off the plate to protect him because I just wanted to get that second curveball. If he was, you know, 0-2 because he threw that curveball over, you know, of course I want to throw it outside, but the goal is off speed, then you can come with a fastball. If we're two balls, one strike, if he throws both off speed for a ball, it's okay. You can throw a fastball in the zone somewhere and the guy will generally get himself out. Now that sounds crazy, but let me tell you, it works. Over the 20 years I played, I applied that and it worked. And we did some research over that with some of the teams that we played on, and it was uncanny. It was unbelievable how many times players would get themselves that night. You think, oh, we hit a ball hard. You know, I don't ever want to do it again. Trust me, it is it's a mechanical, you're throwing them mechanically off stride. So that's an example of something that you just have in your mind. Hey, you know, if I throw a changeup here and I miss, I can follow up with a curveball because, you know, and just try to throw it for a strike because I'm going to come back with a fastball. And, you know, even if he knows it's coming, there have been times, you know, when they know it's coming. But if you've taken them off stride for a couple of pitches, and that's why you have to protect them, though, of course, on the second one, you got to get off the zone. And
that, you know, this is very interesting. I want to stay on this because I think it's important for coaches to understand. I know I'm learning a lot here. And when you talk about research, are you talking about the experiments you're having with your pitchers, whether it be in pro ball or whether it be now, or are you talking about scientific research?
It's now and the scientific research. We did the research. We charted the pitchers, and every time we did off speed, and threw a fastball that was hittable, they hit under 100. Now a lot of balls were hit hard,
sure,
but they didn't. You know, and it's scary sometimes because you think, oh, we hit that well, but I just cannot tell you. I used it for 15 years, and I empirically saw that sure. Every time, you know, every once in a while a guy hit it hard, but more often than not, as long as you go off speed twice, and they don't have to. Some guys, they couldn't throw an off speed pitch, so I purposely throw them for balls and get 0-2. I mean, they were that behind the hitters, so I thought, you know what? We're better off throwing them a fastball, 2-0 with two off speed pitches and get, you know, pitch to contact here. Now, that's another thing I wanted to say. So one of the other rules is most hitters get their hits within the first three pitches, period. Most hits are done within the first three pitches. As a matter of fact, most hits are on the first pitch, but in the first three pitches. And the best pitchers in baseball, they always have these grooves or these zones when they're in the zone where they're pitching to contact. You know, they routinely do. Not all. You have some strikeout pitchers, but you got, you know, you want to pitch to contact. Let them hit the ball hard on the ground. You know, you pitch so that they're swinging the bat, but you take a little bit off. You know, so, you know, and that's why Jimmy Key was so effective, because he would change speeds on every pitch and let them hit it. And they went comfortable 0-4, and they just thought, oh, I got him. And they wouldn't make it too much of an adjustment. But what was happening was he just kept changing speeds on them, and he got them off stride. And you know, that's something that you want to do as a catcher. You want to be mindful of that. Sometimes your pitcher's not going to realize, you know, where he's at in the count or really what you've been doing. So you need to let him know, hey, you know, we've gone off speed, you know, twice. Now, you don't want to go out to the mound. Let me make this clear. You don't want to break up the time by going up to the, you know, by going out to the mound. The best thing you can do is throw your best pitch when that happens. But when you go out to the mound, but you have to keep it going. You have to keep that timing going where it's off speed, and then let them hit it. Now, if you're in trouble and you got a pitcher that's way behind the hitters. But that's just something to think about. And you don't know what their off speed pitches are. It just depends on the pitcher. But it's a rule. It doesn't matter what count you begin that in. You could be, you know, a 1-0 count when you start. You can be 0-1 count when you start. It really doesn't matter. But you just have to be mindful of that. You have to be mindful of what's his best pitch. You have to be mindful of what's his second pitch. And what does it take to get him to throw it for strikes? Now, as catchers, you know whether they're going to throw balls in the dirt and what they look like. So you have to be, you know, ready and aware of that. But so I think that's
well. And on that note, also, we've got a lot of parents and players that listen to the show everywhere around the U.S., around the world. And you know, you hear a lot that velocity is important, obviously, and velocity to get to the highest level, you've got to have it. Can you explain that a little bit? Why you have to have it? Because you know, in Chicago here, we're seeing you know, Hendricks right now, who could basically win the Cy Young Award. You know, his tops is 90, 91, but he probably sits, you know, 89. Why is velocity so important if you're comparing two pitchers?
Well, whenever you have extreme velocity, it's easier to project on a player. A guy that can throw hard in the 90s is just going to have an easier time of it if he breaks through and is able to find his control.
If that's the key.
If a guy can stay within himself, and I think that's one of the big problems of young pitchers, and I saw my share of guys that had you know, the golden arm that could throw, you know, 100 miles an hour, but they just couldn't control it. And really, that is a mindset. Everything we do in baseball is a mindset, is how we're thinking. And as it is with hitting, it is with pitching. Your hardest pitch, you generally would say, man, I felt like I had a little bit left. You know, I left something on the table. Same with hitting. When you hit a ball, when you crush a ball in the upper deck, you go, man, I had something left. There's something in that feel where you're so you let it go and you get your timing right, but you were under control. It's like using a hammer and a nail. If I said swing a hammer as hard as you can, well, you would know in the context that you meant swing as hard as you can, yet you don't want to bend the nail. I wouldn't even have to tell you that, because if you started to bend the nail, you'd know.
Right. Now, pitcher's strength, hitter's weakness, which one's more important to stay with?
Definitely the pitcher's strength. You have to stay with the pitcher's strength, number one. I mean, okay, let me give you an example. You know, Jack Morris, great pitcher, winningest pitcher in the 80s, probably would have been in the 90s if he wouldn't have retired early, like in, 97, I think is last year. Great pitcher. I mean, he was incredible. His ERA wasn't real low, but he was such a winner. And once he got to a certain point in the game, everybody knew just to hop on him, you know, saddle him up, you know, hop on, he'd win. If let's say the guys were running, he goes, I don't care if they steal second, steal third, they still have to score. That was his mentality. And in his mind, he came at you with his best pitch. They still got to hit it. You know, it's still hard to hit it. And, you know, he had a split finger and a slider, more of a split, you know, he went more to his split, fastball split, but, he relied on his fastball. Guys rely on the fastball. So when we're talking about you make it easier for yourself if you have a really good arm, of course, because it's more effective. You can make more extreme. You can expose the hitter to more extremes when you can throw hard, because then you can throw something easier. You can throw something soft. Sure. And they don't have as much time to react. Now, you have a good hitter, speed doesn't matter. I mean, yeah, there is a point when it's fast and they're not used to seeing that speed, but of course, any good hitter can hit any speed. You have to be careful of that. You can't just rely on speed. You can't just throw it down the middle and throw it hard. You're not going to blow it by guys who can hit.
Now, if you got a choice, guy's got a good average, you know, he's got a very good fastball, but control so-so, and you got a guy who's got an average fastball, but great control. Which guy are you going with?
Well, of course, I would think to myself that I can help him throw strikes, you know, the guy who throws hard. But, and that's what people think, and that's why they hang on to guys that can throw hard. Now, I've caught my share of guys who didn't throw that hard. I mean, I knew guys that threw in the low 80s who were just, they were, you know, Mr. Wizard, you know, they just knew how to change speeds and locations. You know, it's all about, you know, where you put it, being able to change speeds and keep the ball in the strike zone and pitch to contact. You know, there are times when you don't want contact, of course, when you get to two strikes. Like I said earlier about the off-speed, go to a fastball, get them to contact. Now that's, you know, when you're in trouble and you got the pitcher that's maybe not throwing all that well, but it even works with the best pitchers. But once you get to two strikes, then you got to get them out, you know, then you're going for it.
Okay. Well, listen, we're going to do one more question. And we're going to take a short break. I mean, this is so good that we've got to continue it, because as you're talking, I'm writing down questions, which is because I think, you know, I've got a pretty good idea, some of the, you know, audience members out there, what they want to hear. And we're hearing some really good stuff. So let's finish with this, and then we'll take a break and come back and continue it. And Matt, we'll have you back on the hitting part. That's not a problem. We can do a second part just on hitting totally, which I think would be very important. Let's finish off with, I know there's a lot of coaches out there. Let's talk about the signs between the pitcher and the catcher. You know, what kind of signs did you use? You know, you see on TV all the time, the one, the two, the three, you know, and then they point. But give us an idea how, you know, a coach can work with their pitcher and catchers and use a system of signs, and also that maybe runners can't pick up.
Just to hear the truth here, as far as plain as day, I was talking about Jack Morris, probably one of the best pitchers of all time. Every time I'd go out there, right when he'd take the mound, of course, you go over your signs again, okay, you know. And it was always, same as always, second sign, shake off first sign. You know, it's like it doesn't matter, you know. I mean, as a catcher, what's important is to be looking at the runner and try to give the signs when he's not looking. You know, you don't want him to be able to steal signs, because if it's an off-speed pitch, it's a good pitch to run on, especially when you're on second base. So it's you know, keep it simple.
Sure.
Keep it simple and make, you know, whatever the pitcher is comfortable with, because they're under a lot of pressure, because their mind is going to be focused on feel and getting into the zone, and their automatic mind is completely taken over, and they're just feeling the ball and trying to focus on and rehearse and focus on, you know, release point and that kind of stuff. So keep it as simple as possible, and you don't want to let a lot of time build up in between. You know, you want to give your signs quick, crisp. If they shake off, it's quick. You're on to the next sign. If you're wrong, it doesn't matter. Just go to the next sign. You know, just go through.
That slows the game down. Yes. Yeah.
So take your best guess and just go to his second best pitch. You know, if it's a count where you can waste a pitch. Okay. Mm. Then you're considering your third best pitch or your fourth, God forbid. But primarily you're working with your first and second pitches. I would say for anybody out there developing, the best off speed, I mean, yeah, there are some guys with great curveballs and this or that. But as a hitter, I picked that up the easiest, see? So the best pitch, and I think most hitters would agree with this, that a really good changeup is probably the second best pitch in baseball. And then you go to a slight step change, which is actually even better than the first, better than a changeup. But a slight step changeup where you kind of get them off of their timing, and then you throw a changeup. That changeup that looks like a fastball but then ends up short. Looks like the pitch they want to hit and then ends up short. Mm. So, and it's easier to throw I'm not saying the release point is, but if you work on it, it's something that is easier on your arm. Longevity, you could throw it all day long unless you're doing something crazy with your elbow. So as far as the coaches giving the signs, you know, generally, let me give you an example. You could say, you know, first place I touch, let's say the brim of your hat is a fastball, your chin is a curveball, your nose is a changeup, whatever. Just something real simple like that.
Sure.
And you don't want to just go last sign. I mean, if you could do that for a while, but you can kind of go through a sequence where the first place I touch is the key, and then keep going. When I go back to it, then it's the next sign. Okay. Hmm. Now, what I would usually do if I had someone out there giving signs, but I was calling it from the dugout, I would put so I'm looking at the catcher. Let's say I'm in the third base dugout. So I'd put my hand on my cheek. I'm sitting down. I put my right hand on my right cheek. That's a fastball over on that side. So that'd be in into a lefty, away to a righty. If I put my left hand on my left cheek, that was the fastball away to a lefty, into a righty. You know, and I just, you know, grab my nose, whatever, that's a curveball. So we had someone giving signs, and then I would actually give the pitch by something very, very simple that they could see. You know, they could, you know, I was telegraphing it to the catcher, but I'm pretty much out of the, out of the spotlight because there's someone else giving signs.
Sure. Okay. That's awesome, Matt. We are with Matt Noakes. We're going to take a short break, and we're going to come back and continue talking about the catching position. We got a lot more questions to ask Matt. So we're going to take a 10-second break, and we'll be right back.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm. This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.